Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network. This is Anthony Taylor, your host. This week's topic is, love is all there is. We are spirit, and spirit is love. For anyone new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She's also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Our topic this month is spiritual growth. And today we're going to be talking about the presence of spirit in our lives. We are spirit. We come from spirit when we are born, and we return to spirit when we die. It seems like we are humans occasionally having spiritual experiences, but really we are spiritual beings having a human experience. The core essence of ourselves, who we are, is spirit, and spirit is love. But before I go into this topic any further, I always like to begin our show with our spiritual agreement. So please join me, if you will, in this agreement. And it was a gift from my friend and teacher and mentor, Jana Massey. And it goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together, we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony.
Josephine, we received some lovely messages from our listeners last week. Grace wrote in with these inspiring words. Always in beauty, where love resides, love you beautiful friends. Grace.
Oh, thank you, Grace. You know, as we work on ourselves, we reawaken to the deep presence of spirit in our lives. And this is something that we know when we're born, but as we move into our human experience, it's as if a fog shrouds our vision. Then, as our self-love and our spiritual practices get underway, that fog begins to lift again and the sun breaks on through. In that golden warmth of that love, the love of spirit, we see that we are love and that everything around us is love as well. The love of spirit lifts us up, it carries us through, it helps us to know we are whole. We come to understand that it is always surrounding us in every moment of every waking day. And just as it was present with us when we were born, it will be with us when we cast away the clay of our bodies, the bodies that we were created with, and return once more into the vast mystery of life and of love.
Very well said, Josephine. As you were saying those words, I was thinking in my mind, the image came that, you know, when it's dark at night and it's completely black and, you know, maybe it's a starless night or there's lots of cloud, it's as if there's no sun. We can't see it, but the sun is still there. And I was just thinking of those occasions when suddenly maybe I'm feeling out of sorts or I've lost my way, or that feeling of just being at one with everything has left me and realizing that, no, the thing is still there. It's just I'm not aware of it or I can't see it.
Yeah, very well said. Isn't that something? And sometimes, you know, deep in the night, we get into those worries and things. And if we get up and process it a little bit and think about it, oh, I had one of those nights last night, and I went out into the backyard and sat in the dark. It was a warm night, and it was beautiful out. My little cat was with me. And before I knew it, I had realized that, you know, it's so funny and interesting and humorous, because here I am, you know, the cheerleader for spirit is love. And, you know, even I will have those kind of moments. We all do. And so it's just to realize that it's okay. You know, sometimes we slip a little bit, but then we pick ourselves up again, dust ourselves off, and get right back at it. And within a few minutes, you know, out there sitting on my own in the dark at night, I could really feel the presence of spirit around me and really knew that I was on my path and that I'm doing a fine job and it's all okay. Yeah.
Yes, you are.
But, you know, we are so visually dominant in our culture, and because we don't see spirit, we don't recognize it so much. I mean, some of us do, and I certainly have had one or two experiences where I have seen spirit. But more often it is coming through the subtle body. It's something that we can't taste it, we can't touch it, we can't hear it, and we certainly can't see it most of the time. So we forget that we are spirit and that spirit is all around us. And then also, too, life is a school. It's not a vacation resort, sad to say, as much as I would love for it to be. But the reason why we're here is to grow our souls, and our problems are our teachers. So since spirit is love, and since love is the key that opens the doors to our growth, maybe with that you can show our first slide, well, first after the title and the entry slide. But this one says, our joy cannot be rooted in the denial of suffering. Our joy has to be rooted in being fully with what is. And that's Ram Dass. And if we try to push away the suffering that we have, then our joy can't really bubble up as completely and as fully as it really can if we acknowledge that we all do have these light, these darker moments or these times, as you say, Tony, when the clouds are obscuring the sun. And so allowing ourselves to just be with what is, which is something that wonderful teacher Charlotte Joko Beck, that a dear friend of mine has studied with, her book is called Everyday Zen. It's a HarperCollins book. She wrote a book called Everyday Zen, and what her main point is that we want to accept what is. And when we can come to a place of accepting what is, it makes it so much easier for us to just, okay, that's that. We'll move on from there. And then taking that the next step to Byron Katie's lovely teachings of loving what is. That's the title of her book. And loving what is that next little step of realizing that everything is for our greater growth and learning, that this love is the key that opens the doors to our growth, and this is all about soul growth here. Then as well, I love that book, The Heart Math Solution by Doc Children and Howard Martin. And they say that a change of heart changes everything. And it's so true, I think. So with that, perhaps you can show us our next slide, Tony.
Certainly.
Great. And this one says, see all in God and God in all. And this is one of those ones that is really good for us to do, to just take that time to try to realize that everything is divine, everything is imbued with spirit, spirit is all around us, and we can love it all.
Yeah. But, Josephine, we have received a question just now from one of our listeners, and it does relate to just what you were talking about. So maybe it's a good time to ask it.
Sure.
Okay. So she writes, I'm really inspired by all you say, and I want to become more at peace with the world like you are, but there is so much negative energy in my life, and there's so much violence in the world. It makes me so upset. How can I believe that we are spirit and spirit is love with all of that going on? It just seems so hard. What can I do about it? Much love, Carol.
Yeah, Carol, this is a really big question and a really good one, and I'm really glad you asked it, because this has really come up for healing lately. A lot of people are sort of thinking about this. As we go through life, sometimes we can get so caught up in our own negativity or the negative energy around us that we can get a little bit stuck. And all we really want to do is to embrace loving kindness and our own divinity. So first of all, if you're stuck in negativity or you find yourself in a really negative environment, you need to make a change. If you keep doing what you've always done, you're going to keep on getting what you've always gotten. And you need to love yourself enough to stand up for yourself. One of my favorite teachers, Iyanla Van Zandt, she's sometimes on Oprah Winfrey's show, she once said about God that first she throws a pebble, then she throws a brick. Meaning that if we don't get it the first time, the temperature or the volume rises to try to get us to wake up. So if it's a negative environment that we're talking about here, you may need to take a stand. You may need to love yourself enough to stand up for yourself. I had a dear friend who loved being in relationships, and she actually loved being in relationships more than she loved herself. And it was a very difficult time for her because she wound up in a series of progressively more and more abusive relationships. And each time a new man would present himself, he was more alluring and more perfect seeming. And that was a way for divine arrangement to turn up the heat a little bit to help her to see that it was really more important for her to love herself enough to stand up for herself in the relationships. So self-love really is a core foundational issue for us, and abuse and violence comes out of our, you know, doctrines of separation. When we feel separate from each other and separate from love and separate from divinity, this is how we wind up in that them versus us mentality. And of course, our governments teach us that. We have the lines that divide different peoples in the nations of the world. We have that with our theology. You need to learn it my way, and if not, there's likelihood you'll be cast into purgatory or hell. And so that sort of a thing creates that inferiority-superiority mindset that comes out of our ideas of separation, and that's the source behind violence and abuse. And so this is like taking a look at the root cause behind that. And it really can become a pathology for us. It creates, it's the creation, it's how violence is created. I heard a talk on little YouTube just the other day by, I think it's Ellen Watson, isn't it, who is the Harry Potter girl, Hermione Granger. Do you know, Tony, the actress's name?
I think it's Emma.
Emma
Watson,
is it? Emma, that's yeah. Right. And she was speaking to the United Nations, and she spoke about the He for She movement, which really sounded like a wonderful idea, because she was mentioning that so often in the marches and things like that, it's all women who are trying to support women, and that there aren't very many men supporting women. And that if we wait until this, at this rate, you know, we won't have equality in government and elsewhere until we wind up, you know, some 200 or 300 years away. So it's a really good idea for us to have the men support the women in equality as well, because this is, again, another instance of that separation pathology, that thought of them versus us, men versus women, that sort of thing. And so asking the men to support the women, I think, was a brilliant idea. And she spoke so passionately and so beautifully. And we do have a lot of work to do in that area. So just like Emma, you know, we might be called to stand up, to take the path of the activist for ourselves or for others. And, you know, that's one level of addressing negative energy. So that one point, the foundation of self-love and healing our pathology of separation, is really an important one. Now, if it's a negative thought pattern that we're talking about here, in, you know, if we're looking at the spiritual practices, meditation is how we learn how to train the mind. I loved what Louise Hay has taught us in her beautiful book, You Can Heal Your Life. She says that our thoughts control our lives, and the only thing that we need to control is our thoughts. And our thoughts are definitely habits, and fear is learned. We don't come in with fear as a little infant. Fear is something that we learn in childhood and often in our infancy, and sometimes even in the womb, sadly enough, if there's abuse in that situation there. So fear is learned, and fear can be a habit too. So one of the tools that I like to use to help to alleviate myself of fear, because fear is one of those things, it's a negative thought form energy that is creative, and so we don't want to have that in our realm. So if we're talking about healing from the thoughts of negativity, then what we want to do is say something like this beautiful quote of Louise Hay's that I learned and memorized years ago, which is that everything is working itself out for my highest good. Out of this experience, only good will come, and I am safe. And this quote has served me really well, because there have been, as I've mentioned, you know, some very dark times in my own life where things have been tough, and it's hard to see with hindsight when you're in it. I mean, you don't have the hindsight when you're in it. So it's hard to know how things are going to turn out, and you think, oh, this is terrible. But years later, you get ahead of it, and you look back, and you think, you know, I learned a lot from that. My soul really grew from that experience. So everything is working itself out for my highest good. Out of this experience, only good will come, and I am safe. And Louise says that we need to learn how to stop terrorizing ourselves with our thoughts. And I think that's so important. I myself do it too. What am I thinking about this stuff already? And I have to just go ahead and get a hold of myself, change the thoughts. And what I like to do is I like to make a list of thoughts that I would prefer to think instead. And then I try to keep that handy in my pocket or my purse or by my bedside so I can refer to it. And then another strategy is to clean up the diet, because I find that if we are eating junk foods and we have junky blood, then that junky blood goes to our liver, and our liver gets congested. And if our liver is congested, then when the rest of the blood from the body comes bringing toxins, the waste products of cellular metabolism, to the liver to be cleaned, and the liver is already pretty clogged up, then that blood goes back out to the body and out to the brain in a somewhat dirty condition. And so dirty blood makes for dirty thoughts. And so I like to advise that we all, you know, clean up our diets and stay away from the junk foods. We know what they are. We already know what's not good for us and what is good for us. So, you know, lots of fresh vegetables from the garden, that sort of thing is what we want to be eating, and drinking lots of good clean water, and getting our exercise so that our body has a chance to move the blood around and clean our blood. So typically, you know, we don't get there overnight. That's why we call it a practice. That's why we call it the practice of meditation or the practice of prayer. And I myself, I've been working on this for years and years, and I'm still not there. But I'm better. The negativity in my life doesn't grab me as fast or as hard anymore. But I can still succumb from time to time, like I said. But I can usually get out of it sooner and move ahead faster because I've become familiar with how to do it. And I work at it. However, some go so deep into spirit that they can have a complete transformation, literally overnight. And one example of which that many of you, I'm sure, have heard of is Anita Murjani and her story. She died of terminal cancer. I think it was a four-year death. And all of her organs were non-functioning at the time that she died. Trillions of dead cells were in her body, and they were all restored to health literally overnight. And she came back cancer-free immediately with the understanding that what she said, and I'll just read what she said because I've got it right here. She said, it felt like, I love her story, she's great, and she's on the internet, she's written a book, and she's fully available. She said, it felt like I had woken up to a different reality. It felt like I had awoken from the illusion of life, and from that perspective, it looked like my physical life was just a culmination of my thoughts and beliefs up to that point. It felt like the whole world was just a culmination of mass consciousness. That is, the culmination of everyone's thoughts and beliefs. It felt like nothing was actually real, but that we had made it real with our beliefs. I understood that even my cancer was not real. It was also a part of the illusion. So if I went back to my body, I would not have the cancer anymore. And another thing is that there was this incredible understanding of how we are all interconnected, and how what I felt within me affects my whole universe. It felt like the whole universe is within me. As far as I'm concerned, if I am happy, the universe is happy. If I love myself, everyone else will love me. If I'm at peace, the whole universe is peaceful, and so on. Isn't that an amazing statement and such an incredible experience?
Yeah, and coming out of so much suffering.
Yes, yes. And then that instantaneous change.
Mm-hmm.
So we can change, you know, in a heartbeat. And when we do, our whole world changes around us to match our new understanding. But we have to be rock solid in that new awareness, and that requires a real transformation like Anita went through. So she went through the 4 years of dying to get there. She had to surrender everything, including her life, and then she had that total transformation. So this is work. It's a school here on Earth. And so for you, Carol, you know, in that particular situation, and really for every one of us, you know, it's important to remember that all of our challenges are lessons, and they're given to us for our growth on a soul level. And this might include standing up to say no to violence, or reaching out for help, or asking for guidance within. You know, about 10 years ago, I started this group. It was based on two books that I was really just completely in love with. The first one was the title is called CUNT, C-U-N-T, A Declaration of Independence, and it's by Inga Muzio. And, you know, that word is perhaps the most profane word in our language, and yet all that it means is woman. That's the only thing it means. It means woman. Whereas I think the word vagina, she explains, means something like the sheath for a sword. And she said in her book right at the beginning, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't feel like I'm a sheath for a sword.
Mm.
I thought, no, me either. And so here's this word cunt that only means woman, and yet it's considered so so horrible, so profane. And that really says a lot about us in our society. And she's a beautiful activist, and one of the things that she says is that it's our silence, are not speaking up about what these experiences are that have happened to us that allows them to keep on going. And it's, something like if, somebody has committed a rape to a friend of yours, go paint his car white, white raper on it, whatever. Just let him know that we're not going to be quiet about this anymore. And then, of course, we have shelters, women's shelters and things. We can get out of these bad situations. We can vote at the polls. We can, donate to various campaigns that are standing up for women. We can learn about the cycles of abuse. They are so prevalent, and they're so well known now, exactly the patterns, how the abuser will try to separate the person from their friends and their family and get them so that they're alienated and estranged from all of them, and then they can really get into the serious abusing going on. Versus, and the other book that we studied in the group, we called ourselves the Peace Cunt book because the other book was Peace Pilgrim, her life and her work in her own words. And here was Peace Pilgrim, a fully, amazing individual who had no need to stand up and oppose anything because she really saw the love in everything. She had really done the work on herself spiritually, and she had really become an enlightened person. And that was really the sum of the discussion group, because I was reading these two books, and each time I would read one of them, I thought, right on, that is so true and so right. But yet they were standing in almost polar opposition to each other. Kant has a real strong activist call, and Peace Pilgrim is a real strong be in the love, seek God in all call. And so I realized I needed to find what was it about both of these books that really called me so deeply and so dearly. And then I finally realized, yes, Peace Pilgrim, she's enlightened. And the rest of us, we're still in the trenches hacking it out. So we're working on it. We're working on it.
Well, that's truly amazing. I mean, I really see that, that the two poles,
yes,
in the world, and then almost like, is it beyond the world or seeing through the illusion of the world? I don't know what it is.
Yes, it really is something, isn't it? And there was Peace Pilgrim, where everything she needed came to her. It was given to her, even the thoughts to think and the words to speak, with ever even needing to ask for them. It just came to her. So we're really talking about two totally different levels here. And we're also talking about two different perspectives in regards to our healing path. In one, the negativity is outside in our environment. In the other, the negativity is inside, in our minds, in our thought patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And as with, Anita Morsani, she came to realize that they are both intrinsically interrelated. As we change one, we also change the other. So she changed her mind, and then that completely changed the environment of her body that she was living in. So it's the two different levels, the one of, growth and development here, and one is the level of the enlightened master. And, the other is where the rest of us are all working to overcome the dogmas, the separation mentality. And it's as I've said before, it's the illusion of our separation from the divine that causes all of our suffering, as Anita Morjani came to realize. So we can take either road, whatever we're called to do, be it, the activist or the spiritual journey reaching toward enlightenment. Now, if it's the spiritual journey that you're called to, a good place to start is learning how to love yourself. So that's where in steps meditation and prayer and dreams and sanctuary, all the things that I like to teach about on the radio show. And then we find the people who were abusive or otherwise or negative in our lives, or, we get caught up in the negative energies that are inside of our own minds. Those people who are negative or not so great for us in our lives, they either change in order to match where we are in our minds, in order to stay by our sides, or they just simply fall out of our lives. And our circles of friends do change throughout our lives, and they reflect who we are and who we are becoming. So it's really interesting to notice who our friends are and what those qualities that they have are like. And we'll find that they do reflect who we are. And so making changes is a good thing. So additionally, if we find that we keep losing our connection to spirit and thus to love because of so many swirling energies around us, perhaps the exercise that Renee mentioned in her note that Tony shared earlier, remember at the start of the show, Tony, the Many Faces of God meditation?
Yes, I do, yeah.
That might be a really useful one for us to experience. And so why don't we all try to do it together right now? But before we do, I'd just like to remind you of our slide that's up on the screen, which says, see all in God and God in all. Because as we move away from that separation, those separation ideologies, into the understanding that we are all one, which is a more enlightened state, all negativity drops away, and we see that our lessons are our teachers and that everything is here for our greater growth and learning. As Louise said, out of this experience, only good will come, and I am safe. So I'm also reminded of Mother Teresa's famous quote when she was asked how she could face so much sickness and poverty day in and day out. And she replied, "I behold my beloved appearing before me in all of his many distressing disguises." Now that is enlightenment. And that's where we're headed. And we're not there yet, but it's what we're striving for. The negative energy just falls away. It rolls off like water off a duck's back. It's a really wonderful state to try to aspire to. So let's go ahead and move into this exercise now then. So allow yourselves to just breathe and get comfortable. Maybe sit back a little bit in your chair if you're sitting. And close your eyes if you'd like to. And of course, if you're driving a car, please do save this and all of these meditation exercises for later. You can just listen to them and think of them and remember them and do them at a later time. And now what we're going to be doing is we're just going to ask the divine to appear to us. Some sort of holy image perhaps might pop into your mind, or a tree or a sacred grove or a spring or a pool of water, maybe a bowl of fruit. Even a well-crafted handmade chair or a table. Or perhaps it's one of those, you know, hard lessons that we've been speaking of, like an illness or an injury. We can just sit with whatever it is, knowing that everything is for our greater growth and learning. So now, just allow an image of the divine to come to you. And we'll just take a few moments to let that manifest. Just anything, take the first thing that pops into your head. And then return to your normal waking consciousness. And allow yourself to stretch and move a little bit. Open your eyes if they were closed. For me, I saw an apricot. It's still that time of year where we still have the last of the stone fruits coming in. How did that go for you, Tony?
Well, it was really nice. I mean, I couldn't limit myself to one thing. I had a whole load of images going through my mind.
That's nice.
It was mainly people.
Oh, that's
and different
great.
People.
Lovely.
But it finished up. I'm sure you saw this. You know, Chloe, her recent exhibition, the
yeah.
sculpture with the plant woman
yes.
who has the succulent head and the little arms.
Yes.
And I just had that image with those beautiful golden hands coming out of the
yes,
side.
Yes, yes, so beautiful and so delicate and so graceful.
Yeah, I really do love that sculpture.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's what I would see. And
nice.
I think for Chloe, when she made it, it was expressing something of the divine for her.
Yeah, it was really quite an extraordinary... It is an extraordinary piece, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Yeah, so perhaps you can put that slide up now next. This one is a metta meditation or a loving-kindness meditation that is really a beautiful one. And it says, "May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free."
That's really nice. I first came across the metta meditation many, many years ago. I was actually a student at university, and I remember a woman teaching it to me and some other people.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
It's really nice to be reminded of it again.
Yeah. So for me, I really believe that God is love, and that we are love, and that love is what we are here to do. And I sometimes think so fondly of that one story that was, I'm afraid I don't have the book, it was in one of the angel books, and it was the story about the little four-year-old girl who kept begging her mom and dad to let her be alone with the baby in the baby's room. And the parents at first were like, "Well, I don't, you know, is that okay? Is that safe?" And then they realized, "Well, we have the baby monitor. We can just put the baby monitor in there. And if there's anything, any problem going on, we'll know about it. And then we can intervene if we need to." And so they let their daughter go in with their new baby girl. And the baby girl was only just a few days old or a week or two. And they heard their four-year-old daughter whispering to the baby, "Tell me about God. I'm forgetting."
Oh, wow.
Isn't that an amazing story?
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it reminds me of this little story that I heard. It's told by a British man called Sir Ken Robinson.
Yeah.
And it's about an incident that took place in an elementary school classroom. and the teacher says to this little girl, she's only 5 years old, what are you drawing? And she says, well, I'm drawing God.
Huh.
And the teacher says, well, that's not possible because nobody knows what God looks like. And she looked up at the teacher and said, well, they will in a minute.
That's beautiful. Oh, that's so great. Yeah, there are times in our lives when we just have to realize that we're not in control, that there's something bigger than ourselves, that a force that's greater than us that is expressing itself through us. Like, for instance, at that time when we change from an infant into a child or from a child into an adult, we can't reverse that process. There's no going back as much as we might like to. And the universe is continually expressing itself through us. It brings us here. It lets us have our lives. And then we move back into spirit. And while we're here, we do have spirit guides and angels. And, you know, some of you have heard my angel story, but it's a good one. So maybe I'll tell it again now, and I'll read it from my book, Step into Magic, which I have here. And it goes like this. I was only 19 when my mother died. Innocently, I answered the phone, only to be utterly destroyed by her physician explaining that she was gone. I fell into uncontrollable grief. I would not be consoled. My father's secretary heard me from the office upstairs and came down to my side to try to break through my wailing and comfort me, but I couldn't be reached. Part of me felt I was not even in my body. I seemed to just be quietly sitting, watching myself from slightly above. My grandmother, Noni, was called, and she arrived shortly. In her wisdom, she simply gathered me up and took me outside to walk among the great trees that grew along the shore of the little lake below our home. There, out in nature on that still day with high clouds overhead, her quiet and loving words began to wash over and through me. After a while, my grief toned down to a steady weeping, but still I was incapable of imagining how I could exist without the loving presence of my mother in my life. As we walked, I tried to listen to what my grandmother had to say in hopes that she could show me a way that would enable me to carry on. But it all seemed so useless, and I kept being distracted by the sound of something I couldn't see up in the tops of those very tall trees. There, in the quiet sky, I could hear and feel subtle gusts of wind being pushed upward and downward by what seemed like large birds. Periodically, I would glance up and scowl, a little annoyed at feeling and hearing something while not being able to see anything up in the branches. At one point, as I looked up, my grandmother paused and asked, "Darling, what is it that you keep looking at up there?" I replied that I didn't know, but it seemed like there were huge birds up there, only I couldn't see any. She caught a little breath, then with a sweet look of deep knowing, she said, "Ah, that would be the angels." And with that, I looked again, and though I couldn't see them with my eyes, high overhead, another part of me saw 5 or 6 of them. They were very large, maybe 20 feet long, with enormous wingspans circling above us, invisible yet somewhat gossamer. I could still distinctly feel and hear the great movement of air caused by their wings. They seemed to circle a few times more as I stood lost in awe and wonder. Then they rose higher and gathered together and flew off over the water towards the east. That moment rekindled in me a sense of wonder and joy, and most importantly, my desire for life. For that short bit of time, I completely forgot my grief. Deep within, I knew that those angels had not only come for me, but they had also come for my mother, and that all would be well with her as it would also be with me. Then I watched as they flew away. The further they got, the more clearly I could see them. By the time they reached the distant horizon, they looked like great silvery birds, almost lost in the big sky. When they were gone, my grandmother stroked my hand. We looked deeply into each other's eyes and smiled. With a great calm and the joy of truth in my heart, I knew that I could go on. I knew that in time I would be able to heal my grief. So we turned and headed home.
Well, that's beautiful, Josephine. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, these things happen. You know, we do have these moments where we come to realize that there are spirit guides and angels around us. And you know, after that, it was some time later, but though my mother was taken from me so young, and there were a number of years where I didn't really commune or reach out to her because I really felt that she needed her rest, but there came a time down the road where I began to allow myself to open to communicating with her. And there's now a certain pink rose out in my garden that I'll go to. And when I go there, I can, you know, ask her to come and join me there. And she, and I can hear in my own head, I can hear her voice and her tonal inflections and her turn of phrase and even her way of thinking. And she will bring me comfort and words of wisdom. Even though I think that she has reincarnated, the mystery is vast, and there's a part of her that's still available to me. Her personality there, rich with love and emotion and feelings for our deep connection and our shared love, that never dies. And, you know, somehow I just gave myself permission to do that, probably with personal private ceremony years ago. And the statistics are rising on the percentage of people, especially widows, who feel that they have relations with their deceased husbands. I understand that it's something like 20% now of women who have lost their husbands will admit to having ongoing relations with their deceased husbands. So this is another beautiful example of spirit being all around us. And we'll speak more of this later next month when we get into the end of October and November. We'll talk a bit more about that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that, Josephine.
Yeah.
Something that's really interesting to me. Yes, so I can't wait to get into that. meanwhile, we've had a lovely comment from Simone from Oakland in California.
Oh, nice.
And she writes, greetings, dear Josephine. Just taking the chance to tune in. Thanks for all you do to anchor spirit in matter.
Oh, great. Thank you, Simone. And that's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's anchoring spirit and matter. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
So another way that spirit can guide us is one that was prevalent in my family. Both my mother and my older brother were premonition people. So they could, my mom got usually through premonition dreams, but she also would have waking premonitions. And then my brother had a very profound premonition when he was in high school, and he had just gotten a new Fiat, new to him, used, but it was kind of a sporty little Italian car, and he loved to go swiftly around the curves up on Mulholland Highway in the Los Angeles area, and he was having fun doing just that one summer afternoon, you know, squeaking around the turns, and all of a sudden he got this vision in his head, just planted in his head, of his wheel coming off of the axle. The whole wheel actually coming off the axle. And he thought about that for a second and thought, that's really weird. And so he slowed way down, and on the very next turn, exactly that happened. The whole wheel came off of the axle, and it came off so abruptly that it bounced up over the telephone wire and then went plunging on down the canyon. And it was just as he was coming around a curve, and the disc brake plowed into the soil, the berm at the side of the road. And he wound up going up the berm a little bit and managed to stop just before his car would have gone plummeting down the hill. Now, if he'd been going fast, of course, he probably would have lost his life that day. But instead, he had this little premonition image of this wheel coming off. And I think sometimes that, you know, I like to imagine that there was, that his angels and his guardian angels were, his guides were, you know, hanging around there, probably an angel sitting right on the hub of that car, watching those bolts on that tire going, oh my God, it's getting loose, oh, it's getting wobbly. And then suddenly, you know, just sending that image right into his brain strongly, you know, from an external source, the image just arrived in his mind and it saved his life. So it's really something how, and maybe you can show that next slide because this one is really appropriate to this story, how spirit continuously steps in to assist us, often saving the day. And I really think that's true.
Well, something has certainly saved me at many times in my life. And I do actually have a story, but before,
okay,
if we get the chance for that, we received a message from Patrick
Los
Osos.
Oh, Patrick, thank you.
And he writes as follows. This evening I watched Paul McCartney present a half-hour video about the horrible industry around the raising and farming of animals for food.
Yeah.
I made it through about 20 minutes before my stomach could no longer process it. Could you speak to the idea of converting one's diet to one void of animal-sourced foods and what steps one might take to reach that conversion?
Yes, well, Patrick, I'm so glad you wrote in about this because what a pertinent topic that is today, as we are speaking a little bit about violence in our lives and how we can end that violence in our lives. And, you know, there is that famous quote by Gandhi that I think is so poignant and so directly to the point. He said that the most violent weapon on the face of the earth is the table fork.
Mm.
And I really believe that. And I have many friends who, you know, and family members who would say, you know, I would never hurt an animal. I would never, you know, if somebody was abusing an animal, I would just, believe me, the tiger would come out of me. I would want to kill them. You know, and that is the thing, is that we would stand up for cats and dogs and animals on the street or somebody harming a little wild animal in whatever. But yet we go to the supermarket and buy the packaged and styrofoam and plastic wrapped arms and legs of our beautiful animal friends every day to eat for food. And so, you know, it's kind of a very graphic term, but I heard on this one television show about a chef. It was called River Cottage, and he definitely did cook with meats. But at one point he was trying, he loved the little mice that would come into his house. He thought they were sweet, and they were his little friends, and he didn't want to hurt them. And so he called upon an animal communicator to come and help him remove them from the house. And they did successfully do so by creating a much nicer place for the mice just on the property, just down in a shed. And one of the things that that animal communicator said when she was noticing his pigs that he was growing for slaughter, she said she referred to him as a corpse cruncher, which I thought was quite a term.
Yeah.
I know, really getting right in there. And this is something that we have to take a look at, this double standard of how we can be opposed to violence in our world and yet contributing so much to violence directly ourselves. And I am no exception. Probably the dairy industry is one of the cruelest of all of the animal husbandry industries, and husbandry is not really the best word for it, because we like to think of our husbands as being caring and loving, and so that's a kind of a misnomer right there, in fact. But, you know, the dairy industry is particularly difficult on those very young child-aged animals, and yet I'm a Dane, and I do really well with dairy in my diet. You know, not everybody can really assimilate dairy very well, but I notice that my teeth get dark if I don't have just a little bit of dairy now and then. So, you know, I kind of like having nice, like, white teeth. So.
And you do like butter, Jim.
And I do like butter.
Come on, be honest.
Let's just be honest about it. So, you know, there I yearn back for the time of my mother's dairy. You know, she was raised on a dairy farm, and she and her sister each had, I think it was a dozen cows that they milked before school every morning. It was a very personal relationship, and it was a much less cruel industry where there was a lot of love between the people and their animals, and they all got along, and we all see that they all have personalities. Frank and I just recently got a little betta fish, Petal, and he's got such a little personality. He's really enthusiastic for life, and he's a sweet little thing. And so all consciousness is everywhere, and so taking a look at this, and so, yes, to get back to your question, Patrick, how do we make this transition? Well, easily. So the first thing is to realize that a lot of what we think why we need meat is a buy-in. It's a belief system that we have been taught from the time we were young. In fact, from the time we were infants. I think Frank's little infant baby card when he left the hospital was courtesy of Borden milk products. And so, you know, his name and his date of birth and birth weight and length and all of that was promoting from the dairy industry. And so we have been taught that from the earliest time. But it doesn't need to be that way. We can get along just fine with foods that are not animal-based. In fact, we actually thrive. There's a wonderful film by Michael McGregor. He's an MD, and I think it's called The Top 25 Causes of Disease. And it's on YouTube, and you can go ahead and look at that and see that, you know, there are tons of foods that we can eat and that are very good and helpful for us. I mean, just thinking of the return to the garden. So, you know, if you have a concern about more proteins, well, then legumes and foods of that nature, nuts and seeds. But really, there's no time in the life of the human being when we need more protein than when we are an infant at the mother's breast. And that mother's milk is only 4% protein. And yet an apple or a plum or a pear, those are right around 4% protein right there. Same with kale and collards, and we're getting our calcium from there. And there's a big misnomer about, or a big misunderstanding about, the protein needs that happen for, you know, we think, oh, you've got to eat your dairy because it's high in calcium. But really, the calcium that's in dairy, though it is high, dairy is also really high in animal protein, and the high proteins require calcium for us to digest them. So we wind up at a calcium deficit when we eat dairy, from what I understand. So the whole issue is a big topic, but there's lots of good information on it. I recently have a little book up on Amazon. It's called Positive Possibilities, Health and Healing Tips from a Medical Intuitive, and it's available as an e-book as well, very inexpensively. And there's an article in there called The Miracle of Osteoporosis that talks about some of these things in detail. And another one is Health Naturally. There's a whole lot of wonderful little articles in there to learn more about this and how to make that transformation into the plant-based diet. But it really is the diet of health and the diet of longevity. John Robbins wrote a beautiful book called Healthy at 100. And the groups of people from throughout the world that have really lived the longest have been those people who have very, very little animal products in their diet. They generally tend to eat fresh foods. They eat no leftovers. They eat what they pick from the garden in that meal, and if they don't eat it then, they give it to the pigs or to the guinea pigs or put it into the compost, and they get a ton of exercise. You know, they're living into the 90, 100, and 102-year-old grandfather is taking the goats all the way up the mountain in the morning, coming back down for lunch, and then going all the way back up again after lunch, and then coming back down for dinner. So it's a lot of exercise that happens in those diet styles as well. And just a little bit of meat, like some of the folks who live in Japan that are very long-lived, they might have a little bit of, tiny bit of fish once a week, more as a seasoning than as a main dish. So that's one of the things that you can just start to try to begin to move your diet in that direction. And I like to take small steps. So, you know, I might do something like, oh, today I might try to have, you know, 17 different vegetables in my green juice. Or I might try to consume, you know, a half a pound to a pound of leafy greens in a day. Or I might eat one raw meal in a day. Or, you know, try to consume 10 different vegetables. Or maybe, you know, to get started, maybe just consume no more than animal products, no more than one time a day. You know, to employ mindfulness when eating, to really offer our gratitude and our thanks, and to maybe another tactic might be to get organic produce and have that today. Or try 6 different fruits in one day, something like that, you know, anything. Move your body, exercise, or, you know, only consume packaged foods if they contain 5 ingredients or less. Those kind of things. Those are all wonderful little tips that we can use to try to go ahead and make that change, that swing that boat round to a more plant-based diet. Thank you so much, Patrick, for bringing that up, because it really is key to this topic that we have today of realizing that spirit is all around us and spirit is love, and love is what we are and what we're here to do, and making that transition into a more love-based planet and away from that sort of what you might call a slave planet into a love-based planet. Yeah, thank you so much.
Right, Josephine, where were we?
Well, let's see.
I was going to tell, did you say, I wonder, we're getting rather near the end. I'm just wondering whether I should tell that little story yet.
Oh, sure.
That I had
it's
in
a
mind.
Great little story.
Okay. Well, this was about a story about intuition, I guess, or suddenly having the sense of an intuition. As many years ago, possibly as many as 30 years ago, and I was walking home through the city in England late at night, and it was very dark, maybe 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and I became aware that this man was following me, and he was on the other side of the road. And I was walking deeper and deeper down into this more deserted part of the city on my way back home, and I was aware that he was there, and he seemed to be following me. And it was getting more and more deserted, and then we got to this point, and I suddenly realized, oh, he's coming across the road for me. And I suddenly had this flash in my mind, and it was like an image of me turning instead of running, but actually going straight towards him and staring at him straight in the face. Mm. And I don't know where this flash came from, and it seemed like a ludicrous thing to do. And so as he's starting to run across towards me, I sort of run towards him, and then we sort of like face each other head on, and I just glare in his face.
Wow.
And instead of him, like, attacking me, which I think is what he was planning to do, he just, like, backed off a little bit.
Wow.
And then walked away.
What a moment.
And then I just carried on walking. So I don't know if that's what you had in mind, but it felt like something, I don't know if it was a premonition, but suddenly I had this flash.
This flash of insight,
what I had to do.
Well, that's a great example of following inner guidance, and it communicated something to him in just such a way that he would understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another way that spirit can, as it edge its way in and get our attention, is, you know, through synchronicities, which is similar to getting flashes of insight like that or meaningful coincidences. My mom used to say that three times a charm, you know, and that if you have something come up before you for the third time, then take an action. And that can be a very circuitous trail, you know. We can wake up from a dream with a certain friend in the dream, and then that morning they call with an invitation maybe to go swimming or something. And let's say we had plans to, you know, I don't know, paint the house, clean the garage, something like that. But because of the dream image, we decide to go with them instead. And then there we just happen to meet someone who needs something done, and we're just the person for the job. So synchronicities is another example. I mean, getting the inner guidance, like those premonitions or like your little hunch that came to you, but we can also get guidance through synchronicities where spirit can kind of step in and channel us to right where we need to go. And then still another way that spirit can help us is to guide us is through our inspirations. And perhaps you can show our slide there. This is, you know, divine love saying, when we have an inspiration, it's like divine love is saying, go this way, you'll like it, it's really joyous, it's really good. And our comfort can guide us as well. You know, if we're not comfortable, that's a good sign we should go in a different direction. And if we are comfortable, that's a sign that maybe we should, you know, head in that way. So this slide says, our comfort and our joy are beautiful guides for us in our lives. So we've got, you know, hunches and intuitions and premonitions and synchronicities and our comfort and our joy. And then another way that we can make a little bit of room for guidance and for spirit to more easily reach us is through, of course, our dreams and our meditation and our prayer. And then there's techniques that we can use, practices like casting the runes or the I Ching, or maybe putting out the animal medicine cards or the angelic messenger cards. These can be tools for our own psychic ability as well. And here again, we're spending time alone in our sanctuary or we're out in nature. And one last thought that I'll share is about loneliness. You know, we are never alone. Spirit is always with us. And our higher self aspect of our own self is with us. And there's a slide. Maybe you can put that slide on. And it says, ask your God, oh God, what would you have me know? And I think that this is a way that we can actually get guidance and inspiration. And the voice that will be coming through from our higher self is always neutral and compassionate. And I think, you know, why should we go to other people for our deepest, most precious sources of information? We don't really need the middleman. We can dial direct.
I like that, Josephine, very much.
Yeah. So reaching for divine consciousness like this, of just saying, and I'd like maybe for you to have that as a homework assignment this week, to just ask your God, oh God, what would you have me know? And this might seem like serious business, and it is serious business, but it's also joyous. Laughter is not absent. And, you know, I've heard it said, and I believe it's true, that all scripture is channeled and all channelers practiced. And when we practice something, we get good at it. You know, the information from the Bible came hundreds of years later from the disciples, and the wisdom of the Quran came from the Prophet Muhammad, who conferred on high. More recently, we have Conversations with God with Neil Donald Walsh. And he spent years alone and homeless, and we can develop our listening skills when we have experiences like that. You might think, oh, that was a terrible experience. But the same with Eckhart Tolle. And great wisdom can come to us. Another example of channeled spiritual wisdom is The Course in Miracles with Helen Schuckman. She did a beautiful job with that book. It's a beautiful spiritual text.
Yes, I mean, it seems to me that that must be the case with all spiritual literature. On some sense, there's that opening and that surrendering and allowing something to come through. Last week we were talking about the Sufis?
Yes, I think it might have been.
And I was, you know, the different spiritual practices. Was that last week? I think it was.
I think it was.
And I mentioned about the Qawwali music that the Sufi singers do. And this is the way, well, certainly one very famous Sufi singer, Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, expresses it. He says that there's no way that a human being could sing Qawwali as well as he does. It's obviously it's God singing through him. So that all he does is he waits for the impulse to come to him, for God to speak through him, and then he just lets it happen. And then when God is finished, he stops singing. And that's how he explains why he can sing so well.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for that. So, I just have one last little thought that I'd like to share, which is about nature spirits. And spirit is present in the water, it's present in the mountains, it's present in the devas of certain areas, and there's a couple of books that I'd just like to mention before we wrap it up tonight, Tony, if that's all right with you. The first is The Findhorn Garden by the Findhorn Community. And in that story, Dorothy McLean and Eileen and Peter Caddy, they communicate with the devas of the plants, and then also Behaving as If the God in All Life Matters with Michelle Small Wright. Beautiful story. And then another last book that I'd just like to give a little nod to is Companions in Spirit, A Guide to Working with Your Spirit Helpers by Leah Maggie Garfield and Jack Grant. And all of these are available on the resources section of my website. If you scroll down from the radio page, you'll see the resources listed there. And if I can just squeeze in one more little homework, that's that if you don't already have one, just see if you can find for yourself a totem animal or a spirit animal or a spirit guide. And maybe you have more than one. And let a new one appear in your life if you'd like.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. Well, with that, it really is time for us to go. So let me just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Simply click on the top menu for radio. And if you do have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page of Josephine's website. Again, that's stepintomagic.com, and send us your message. So, Josephine, any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much for that, Tony. I'd just like to share some of what my teacher, Jana, once said, and that's that the information that we receive from spirit often comes through our subtle body. When we are in our purity, it's well worth coming to the place of aloneness where we can listen. I've found that we can receive impressions that can both be either very faint or quite strong, and it's good to listen to our subtle impressions and not override them with rationalizations or second guesses. So pay attention to your gut feelings. And the world can be very distracting. You know, others can take us off of our path. As Jana said, it's good to set aside the distractions and stand in the power of ourself. It's good to be who we truly already are. So in closing, I'd like to thank all of you so very much for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you over the radio, and I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the presence of spirit and love in our lives. This has been show number SG-1.14. And if you have enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about foundational practices for a spiritual life.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.